Hello and welcome. It's the coronation that has kept getting postponed, but according to media reports, the moment is here. The Congress Party is ready to formally elevate Rahul Gandhi as the next party president this coming week. Rahul's election, when it happens, will be the most significant development in opposition politics since Prime Minister Modi assumed office. Until now, he's been able to insulate himself from the Congress's failures, even ones in which he allegedly played a key role, like the party's performance in the last two UP Assembly elections and, of course, in the 2014 general election. But post-elevation, this will no longer be possible. Rahul Gandhi brings with him more legislative experience than any member of his family who had previously held the post, but also the least impressive political track record. There now seems to be a concerted effort to repackage and rebrand the Congress vice president. The latecomer to Twitter is gaining social media traction, evidence from the high volume of retweets for his suddenly punchy posts. He's often perceived as a reluctant politician, but he recently said that he was ready to take charge in 2019. And the question now is this Rahul Gandhi's now or never moment? Today on the show, we have Manishankar Iyer of the Congress, Ejaz Ilmi of the BJP, Ghanshyam Tiwari, the national spokesperson for the Samajwadi Party, Professor Neeraj Chandok, political scientist, Sohail Seth, managing partner of ConsulEdge, a man who knows a thing or two about brand marketing and management, Rashid Kidwai, associate editor with The Telegraph, Vinod Sharma, political editor of the Hindustan Times, and Saurabh Pant, stand-up comic and founder of East India Comedy. Thank you all. Mr. Ilmi, I want to start with you first. We have a new, more aggressive Rahul Gandhi. We're seeing he's taking on the BJP in Gujarat. The BJP trying to take him on his home ground in Amethi. Gujarat going to elections in a few months. Amethi in 2019, a sign that the BJP is nervous?
I think every constituency belongs to every political party. It's an open situation where we can campaign wherever we feel like campaigning. And the BJP takes its elections very, very seriously. On the issue of Mr. Rahul Gandhi, he's been president and waiting for a long, long time. And only Gandhi can become the president of the Congress Party. That is one. Secondly, politics is about being a full-time politician. It's about 24/7, 365 days. So every political party gets the leader that it deserves.
Mr. Iyer, I think the jibe there was that the BJP takes its elections very seriously, that Rahul Gandhi is not around all the time, he's not in it for the long game. Is that changing?
They're taking it seriously because they realize that the mood of the nation is changing. But before I actually respond to him, I want to respond to you. It's not a coronation. A coronation takes place with a king or a prince. It doesn't take place with a party in which the candidate concerned asks for an election, but is unable to face one because there is no rival. Our party has decided to go with Rahul Gandhi. And the minute it has decided to go with Rahul Gandhi, he starts coming into his own, exactly as I had been predicting for the last 15 years, that not until any member of this family has come into its own have they started displaying their true abilities. And therefore, I'm not at all surprised that thus far he has been subordinated and has not been able to come into his own. Now, even as he begins, he's hardly begun, and formally he hasn't begun at all. He's already beginning to make waves, and I assure you that by 2019, he'll be
Gandhi's
a very serious
late
contender.
Bloomers.
Pardon?
Are you saying that Gandhis are late bloomers?
They've all been, starting with Jawaharlal Nehru. If you go back from 1912 to 1919, for 7 years, when the man was 30 years old, he was just lazing around like Ilaba. He only came into his own under the influence of Mahatma Gandhi. And then you saw what happened. Equally, Indira Gandhi, we know that when she first went to speak at the India League, somebody screamed out, "She doesn't speak, she squeaks." And when she became Prime Minister, Lohia said, "Ye Gungi Gudiya hai." And it took 5 years before Gungi Gudiya became Bharat Mata. So therefore, I saw Sonia Gandhi take a lot of time. So I am not surprised that he has taken his time, but I had always predicted that when the moment came,
I get it. You're saying
the man would rise
time,
to the moment. Sorry?
You're saying he needs more time, but can we agree that if you lose in 2019, it is time for the Congress to write him off? How many more general elections should Rahul Gandhi be allowed to lose before you, as a senior leader of the Congress, ask for a change in leadership?
I challenge your assumption. I don't think we're going to lose in 2019. I'm absolutely convinced.
I'm asking if you lose.
Why should I answer not only a hypothesis, but also one that's likely to be disproved? If he loses, let us see what happens. But I don't think he's going to lose. And therefore, I'm just not willing to take into account the fundamental assumption of your question. We are winning, and the proof of it is that these people are running to Amethi. They want to rescue something from the debris into which they are falling.
Neera, what's going on here? We've seen a win in Gurdaspur, similarly another local election in Maharashtra. Is this really a winds of change blowing?
You know, I think one must appreciate the way the Congress party has recovered in the face of a completely amoral and undesirable campaign to ridicule Mr. Rahul Gandhi. What do free and fair elections mean? That every party, every leader should have equal chances. Now, when you try to cut the ground from beneath a leader's feet by subjecting him to such uncivil and improper ridicule, there's no other word for it, then what are you guilty of? You're guilty of violating the principle of free and fair elections. But I also want to say that the recovery of the Congress should not be put on the shoulders of one man. I do not think the Congress should replicate the BJP model of being dominated by one person. In fact, it's very surprising that ministers who are otherwise faceless, we don't even know who various portfolios are held by, suddenly come into their own when they have to abuse Mr. Gandhi. It's completely undesirable and undemocratic. I think the Congress needs to reinvent itself in the form of a collective leadership. I don't see why one person, whether woman or man, should be credited for leading a party that has lost elections.
But as Mr. Iyer points out, nobody is even willing to stand for this election that Rahul Gandhi has supposedly called for.
But we do have a collective leadership, and there's tremendous democracy within the party. Otherwise, you think I could have survived?
I'm saying something.
It's not an election, it is a selection, and it is preordained, predestined.
I'm afraid.
You know, this is the outcome of a debate among political scientists. It's not my idea, it's a general debate. That what the Congress should do is put some of its brightest minds, and they have some of the brightest minds in the country in their party, to form a collegium between 45 and 55 and let them strategize what the country needs, what ails the country, and what should be done. I do not think that a replica of political parties is going to solve India's problems. We need a different kind of political leadership. We need a different kind of a political agenda that goes back to constitutional democracy and the idea of equal citizenship. Okay. That the Congress party has to do.
So Neera says there's been a sustained campaign to ridicule Rahul Gandhi. It's uncivil. It is unfair. Politics is not fair. But the fact is, there has been this campaign. He has been the butt of many jokes. Can you rebrand a brand? Are public memories short?
So let's take a typical marketing situation. First, to support what Mani said, there may not be a coronation, but this will be the world's first correlection. You know, he'll be elected to be coronated. But that we'll park for another time. There are two ways to address this issue. Number one, Rahul Gandhi will fail if he wants to become a smarter Narendra Modi, or if he attacks Narendra Modi in the style that Modi attacks people, because you'll be a me too. The only way, to my mind, that Rahul Gandhi will succeed, at least within the public domain, is if he follows an agenda which is linked to the aspirations of the people rather than the aspirations of ridiculing people. A, B. There is no question that the BJP over the last 2, 3, 4 months has been rattled. You know, when you field cabinet ministers to counter every comment that a guy makes in a foreign university or says everything on Twitter. See, reacting to a provocation in itself shows that you've suffered two things. One is you feel it impugnant upon yourself to react. Number two, you believe he has penetrated the goalpost, as it were. So there is no question. As far as rebranding of Rahul Gandhi, I think the problem lies elsewhere. There has been no branding of Rahul Gandhi. I won't call him a reluctant politician. Reluctance was placed on him. He's been the only person who's been afflicted with partial pregnancy. We every time thought, oh, he will become president, he'll become president, he'll become president. So I don't blame the guy. But where does he go from here? No one is addressing serious issues. All of that is being kind of subjugated in what I would call vile public discourse. That needs to end. He could end that. Number two, rather than respond to every jibe that is made at him, he can actually take the high ground, because everyone, especially in India, loves a victim. They love the underdog. There is no point him playing David when he can easily play Goliath or vice versa. The tragedy today is each political party is responding in the same vein rather than shifting the goalpost. In pure marketing terms, if I can't be the whitest wash, can I be the most fragrant whitewash? As simple. But no one seems to realize that. And you know, as far as social media and all these things are concerned, look, that battle is temporary and it holds no water as far as the general elections or the general voting population is concerned. To my mind, this is a great inflection point for the Congress. You're absolutely right. The knives will be out. I don't think the Gandhis are a surname in the Congress. They're actually the glue. That's what holds all the differing, dissenting people together. If they weren't there, this party would have fragmented long ago. So we must respect the role that they've also played. Having said that, the BJP will and must. You know, it's a political battle. You know, you're not going in for an afternoon tea party with Alice in her wonderland. So if they're going to attack, you've got to be prepared for those attacks. You can't say, oh, the political discourse is uncivil. If it is uncivil, tell the world what civility is. You can't be less uncivil.
Okay, Rishi, Sahil says Rahul Gandhi has penetrated the goalpost. You think so? We see this new avatar. What do you think the catalyst is behind this?
Rahul Gandhi was a serious politician. He still is a serious politician. But it all depends upon success and failure. Failures painted him in a very bad light. Now, if there is any success in Himachal or in Gujarat, or I think the biggest success in 2019, if he's able to stop Narendra Modi from getting another, a clean sweep, a clear mandate, if there is a coalition government in 2019, it will change all equations, even if Rahul is in opposition. See, running a coalition will be very difficult if BJP gets 200 or less seats. Age is on Rahul's side. I think now when he becomes a leader...
But by that logic, also then, this is a do-or-die moment for Rahul Gandhi and the Congress.
It takes time. BJP, if you just recall, it performed in 1980. In 1984, it got two seats. Then it kept in 89, its tally went up, then 91, then 96. Then finally, allow Rahul Gandhi time, in the sense that you don't expect him to win 2019 election by, winning 300 seats. Mr. Iyer would like that. But I'm saying that, we should be a lot more realistic. So I think he's just 45. 10 years he will be 55, and 55 and 60 is the time in Indian politics when
people reach
their peak. Yeah.
All right, Mani, someone agrees with you that Rahul needs more time, says Rashid. But for example, he mentioned Gujarat and Himachal. In Gujarat, for example, you don't even have a face.
These are parliamentary elections. They are not presidential elections.
Gujarat,
the party has
a very prestigious election. The
guy has run away to Delhi. He's eating dhokla here. So please understand that there isn't a face for the BJP there, and perhaps there are unknown faces of the Congress there.
So you're saying Gujarat's
thank
not
God we've got rid
why...
of Shankar Singh Baghela, who was our face. He was the guy who rode pillion with Modi during the Nav Nirman movement. So therefore, there is a change coming. We have just won
a
by-election for Parliament
with
a majority of 1,93,000 votes in a seat that was won in 2014 by the BJP by 1,35,000 votes. This is not an ordinary election. And down in Vengara, in Kerala, where they thought they were going to win, and so fielded Yogi Adityanath, Amit Shah, and all kinds of unlikely creatures, they've ended up their candidate with 5,300 votes against the winner who's got 65,000 votes. They're being completely unveiled. He's an emperor without clothes. And it's all very well for courtiers to say that he has wonderful stitching and beautiful material. But the fact of the matter is that we are now seeing a Modi who has been proved to be someone who's long in his promises and very short in his deliveries, and who knows how to short-circuit himself. He's done that as just now one of their targets, that is Kamala Hassan in Tamil Nadu, has just said, apologize. The man has never apologized. He never apologized for what happened in Gujarat in 2002. So this guy is not going to apologize. And therefore,
just as Rahul didn't when he was asked about the Sikh rights in Berkeley.
Sarah, this constant vilification is something that comes very easily with people like Mani Shankar Iyer and lots in the Congress. I mean, this demonization, this constant vilification, harking back to 2002, it is a continuous process of abuse that continues. And Mani should understand.
Should
understand that the public just understands that you are the ones who are abusing the leadership, elected leadership, which the politic has elected. So I think you should take a step back and get back from your high horse of constant abuse and vilification and demonization and talk about the future.
About
Rahul is the victim of the
But this is very, very symptomatic of the kind of responses that are fetched by these two parties. You know, in Gujarat, it's very clear the Congress is going to be a part of a coalition. So I don't think the fact of nominating a face for the Congress is relevant here, because there is an enormous amount of negotiation going on, it seems, whatever we have read. And it will be probably a consensual leader from all these parties. Now, who it's going to be is going to be an open question. But that question may not be relevant for Gujarat, because it's very clear it's going to be a coalition.
Okay, we've seen talks happening between OBC, the Partidars, etc. But you know, Mani and others have been raising Gurdaspur, raising Kerala. But isn't this all just low-hanging fruit? The Congress is happy with this. For example, around the same period, the BJP has won UP massively, and then they've had this complete walkover, leaving the Congress open mouth with the presidential and vice presidential elections.
Well, I've heard all of them, and I respect their views, but I agree with some, and I don't agree with some. First of all, aggression of Rahul Gandhi. I don't think he's aggressive. He's just being proactive. Remember his statement that he doesn't want RSS Mukt Bharat. I think that is the pitch that he should be making. That he should be creating a counter-narrative, which is inclusive,
saying
which is
reasonable. Saying that there's a need for an opposition.
Which is reasonable. A strong opposition makes for a strong government. This government is in dire straits, if it is, because it hasn't allowed the opposition to articulate its views. It hasn't heard the opposition. And it has been wanting to hear the same salubrious music, you know, that they are doing great work and they are, they are the best for this country.
Is it a government's job to allow the opposition
to? No, government stopped the opposition from articulating its views. In Parliament, it has happened time and again. We have seen it happening. May I say one thing, that Rahul Gandhi was deconstructed. He was not the only person to be deconstructed by the BJP, rather systematically. But all young leaders which were coming up, who were coming up in other political parties and who could have been a robust challenge to the BJP, were deconstructed. If you look at Akhilesh Yadav, systematically sought to be deconstructed, pitted against his father's image, you know, and said that here's a man who wasn't true to his father, how can be true to the people of his constituents. Omar Abdullah, he was doing the most difficult job as Chief Minister of Jammu and Kashmir. But the BJP never gave him that benefit of doubt, that here is a young man who is emerging and he is a pro-India voice in the valley. And he was sought to be muffled. Similarly, today Mehbooba Mufti, despite having a coalition with her, she is sought to be vilified. She is sought to be blamed for everything that is going wrong in Kashmir. Shashi Tharoor, though not in the same age bracket, because he was a guy who was intellectually so well endowed and was a very presentable man and had a robust background as an international politics. He has been deconstructed. The same happened in the case of Assam. You see, we committed the mistake of deconstructing Rajiv Gandhi and the ASU leaders at the same time. And I think a political party that seeks to eliminate Gen X wherever it exists is not being pro-India, so to speak. It is not being pro-India at all. Congress has made its own mistakes. Congress today is like the Soviet Union, unable to keep its talent. But if it is unable to keep its talent, BJP too is looking like a party reliant on wiki donors. I'm sorry, but that's a reality. So Indian polity is highly divided today. It is very partial. It is very prejudiced. And it is very toxic. I agree with the lady. It's very, very toxic. You have to detoxify it. And you have to be proactive for that. And Rahul Gandhi should not use the language which is belligerent. He should use the language that behoves the president of a party which is over 100 years old. He should come across as someone who can talk sense and make people see sense. Otherwise, he would be just a clone.
I want to give Vijay a chance to respond to this.
I just want to very quickly to expect any political party not to deconstruct its opponents or decimate them is equally not possible. Because, you know, that's their business.
But in the manner that you do it.
No. So, therefore, don't expect political parties to follow a certain refined discipline of warfare. On the contrary, you choose a brand of civility that will hopefully appeal to your electorate. As the point that I made earlier, Rahul Gandhi should not always play the fact that, oh, look, I'm being abused, I'm being vilified. You will be abused, you will be vilified. That's the nature of political discourse, sadly, in India today. You need to change the entire structure of that marketing playground and say, look, you continue to do what you do. I will do what I want to do because I think that is right. You know, that's why I said earlier, you cannot be a smarter BJP.
Wait, one second, please. You know, I am on the culture part of the politics. When Rahul Gandhi praised Nitish Kumar, he was attacked by his own party colleagues. He praised Nitish Kumar even before they had set up an alliance with him. He went abroad and praised the Prime Minister for his oratorical skills. He did it. Yeah, I want to know which other political leader who is in a rival position is doing it.
Yeah, but
the Congress party's failure is that they are not able to highlight these shining parts dimension to Rahul Gandhi's personality.
They are not able to optimize or
the biggest enemies of Rahul Gandhi are within the Congress. Congress is a party of lazy people, of laggards. They want to sit on their hands. They are facing rivals who are 24/7 politicians. And here you have politicians who, vacationing most of the time. They reach a place of political battle and say, "Hamara kamra mein AC hai ki nahi? Where is my car?" This is not the way you fight a 24/7 politician.
Okay, I'm going to let Mani respond, but first, Ajaz, I want you to respond to this. Vinod says, this is not a pro-India party. The BJP is not a pro-India party. Rahul Gandhi at least had the grace to say, he says, we don't want a BJP Mukt Bharat because the one thing India does not need is one party rule. It is just as bad.
A lot of the Congress Mukt Bharat was achieved by people within the Congress who were neglected largely by the leadership of Sonia Gandhi and Rahul Gandhi. I mean, they couldn't find time for the leaders like Hemanto in Assam, like Chaudhary Birendra Singh in Haryana, like Narayan Rane in Maharashtra. So we've seen it. The venom that Mani is talking about, it's actually something that's coming from within. When your own leadership that you cultivate is not able to meet your top leader and they leave the party then, the BJP is very clear that we are going to be inclusive if these people have the talent and have the connect with the people. If you're not pro-people and pro-people policies, if you don't have that, the polity is going to decimate you. So leaders ultimately are there in parties at all levels and they come and go. But BJP is showing a sign of inclusiveness by taking such leaders who have the connect on the ground
and not isolating.
That's what you're saying. But then we've taken leaders, you talked about Rita Bhagna Joshi. Now, do you understand the biggest legacy, whether it's of Rajan Kumari Bajpayee ji or Hemavati Nandan Bhagna ji or Lal Bahadur Shastri, all their leaders or their progeny and the next, second and third generation are in the BJP.
This including is Varun Gandhi. Including Varun Gandhi.
You have to understand these things.
Whose ancestry is abused day in and day out
because
by the
we are not a party which is dynastic or family oriented. Yeah. We take people
Varun Gandhi.
The parties.
Yes. How are you not a party of dynasty?
We are not.
Varun Gandhi is in a party.
Rajnath Singh's kid. There are so many examples. I
agree with you.
All parties in India.
You can't deny people. You can't deny people their place.
Congress is more dynastic than the others. Neera, please respond. Also, question. BJP has space for many dynasties.
Yeah.
The Congress only has space for the Gandhi dynasty. But almost all parties in India are
dynastic. Look, every party has a right to choose its leadership. Now, that is an internal matter of the Congress. It's an internal matter of the BJP. Why X and why not Y? I mean, that is their problem. What I want to say is I think this terminology is very unfortunate. If you go on to an opposition Mukt Bharat, what does it mean? You denounce parliamentary democracy? You are into a one-party rule? I mean, the whole rhetoric of the BJP is so unfortunate, because Congress Mukt Bharat or opposition Mukt Bharat means you are paving the way for one of these states which hang by their tenterhooks in the international arena. That is one. Secondly, we are not speaking the language of India or non-India. We're speaking the language of constitutional democracy. We have to bring back that democracy, that notion that parties do not fight for power. They fight to they are representatives and they are accountable to the political community. It's not a medieval monarch fighting for power. It is a party trying to fight for power so that it can work the constitution more efficiently. Unfortunately, this entire language has got sidelined. And we, you know, people say Mr. Modi galvanized a great deal of energy when he was brought into power. That may well be so, I don't know. Where has that energy gone? It frittered away in non-issues of the Taj Mahal, whether Shah Jahan imprisoned, which he didn't, imprisoned his father on Diwali celebrations when little children have died. I mean, what have we done with that energy? I think this is a party that has lost its way very badly.
You know, monarchy, you know, the moment a political leader acquires the capacity to make his candidates win, he's elevated to the level of a monarch. It's a reality. It has happened to Mr. Modi to some extent, unfortunately. It happened to Indira Gandhi. It happened to Akhilesh Yadav. You know, they become monarchs because they are able to make candidates win. But Mr. Rahul Gandhi should realize, and winning a war on Twitter is not what is going to make him a leader.
Correct.
The test of a leader is in leading his party to victory. To victory. He was given the credit in 2009. Of the 21 seats that the Congress won in UP. I think that credit was wrongly given. There was a vacuum, and the Congress looked promising in Uttar Pradesh, and the people elected them. He should make sure that the Congress should look promising to the people as an alternative.
Sure.
Today, too, the people who are disillusioned with Mr. Modi, to some extent, and I do not know what is the extent, for all you know, he may pull a rabbit from his hat, but if they are disillusioned, then they ask after that, who's the alternative? The alternative should be there. And Mr. Rahul Gandhi, like Sonia Gandhi, when she became the Congress president in 1998, Congress won three elections, if you remember, Mr. Manishankaraya. Three elections Congress won. So there was never a doubt of her acceptability as Congress president. There should not be a doubt in popular terms on Mr. Rahul Gandhi becoming the Congress president, because in the party terms, there was never a doubt.
Yeah.
In popular terms, there should not be a doubt. That's what he has to prove.
Okay, is there acceptability of Rahul Gandhi as president? Because we saw in the recent Punjab elections also, there was talk about how he wasn't fully on board with Amrinder Singh being the chief ministerial candidate. Mr. Singh even threatened to quit if he wasn't made. The rest is history. Now Gurdaspur has only strengthened his hold over Punjab. Does he have the heft to influence party decisions, party leaders?
Yes, Sarah, that is a real test of Rahul Gandhi. We'll get to see when he takes over formally as Congress president, how he uses
a vast amount
of talent that is available in the Congress party. You look at any state, you look at Madhya Pradesh, there is Jyotiraditya Sindhia, there is a perception that he can lead party to victory. Sachin Pilot is there in Rajasthan. There is a lot of talent, in-house talent that Congress party has, as you cited example of Amrinder Singh. In Himachal, you look at, he's at advanced age, but, Veerbhadra Singh, he won in 2012 when Congress stocks were really going down. So it's not a question. Even in Gujarat, we know behind the scene, it's Mr. Ahmed Patel who's strategizing a lot of things and getting, many players together against the BJP there. And now when, the two people, even if they are like Jawaharlal Nehru and Indira Gandhi, were very different temperamentally in way of functioning. Sanjay and Rajiv Gandhi were very different. Rajiv Gandhi and Indira Gandhi and Rajiv Gandhi and Sonia Gandhi were very different in the style of functioning. What I'm saying is we'll get to see when Rahul Gandhi formally takes over, we'll get to see how he functions and how he uses this, pool of talent within the Congress to...
But the Congress has had to fall back on the Sonia Gandhi, as you call it, school of Congress, with the Amrinder Singh, with Ahmed Patel. They've had the political smarts. His team really hasn't been able to show that. But I want to bring in Ghanshyam over here. Ghanshyam, you know, Akhilesh Yadav has announced his support for Rahul Gandhi, even though you had that dismal performance in UP, even though he threw him under the bus when he was asked about dynasty in Berkeley.
Well, I don't think anybody threw anyone under the bus. First and foremost, I see a lot of young faces here, and I don't see as many people smiling. This is something, the politics that we are discussing is about the agenda of India tomorrow, the agenda for these people. And I think there's one thing that I would say is different. When you analyze politics from inside out versus outside in, the young leaders of today has to not only build their followership, but they also have to compete with their followers. So every one of these people will follow a leader they want, but if that leader does not do well, they will also criticize that leader. That's what is different about young India. The India that we are going towards demands open politics, demands leaders with open ideas, not closed ideologies. Look at what BJP has done. They said Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas, and turned Uttar Pradesh into guy governance and gobar governance. Today you go to Uttar Pradesh, you see expressways where guys run and cars don't. Two, top three corrupt chief ministers of the country today are from BJP. You name the state, you take any analysis. Top three worst performing chief ministers in the country today are from BJP. So
but
you cannot
very
have
few Congress states
you,
anyway in the country.
Yes,
so
but let's analyze the country.
Who's deciding this ranking?
The lens of the day. The lens of the day is.
But why didn't he tell
Gujarat,
us
Gujarat
should a political party decide the ranking?
Take names. If you're going to drop.
I'll come to that. But look at what happened in Vasundhara Raj's Rajasthan. You come up with a diktat. You are accused of corruption. And you come up of a diktat that shields everyone from corruption. They cannot do, and no one in BJP, the party of Na Khaunga Na Khane Dunga, is transforming itself into Na Bolunga Na Bolne Dunga. I want to say, tell the story of India today. The story of India today is Gujarat mein vikas crazy ho gaya hai, India mein vikas lazy ho gaya hai, aur Uttar Pradesh mein vikas yogi ho gaya hai. We have a chief minister who's a part-time chief minister playing Mahant at all the times and doing his religious duties and forgetting about governance. I ask BJP spokesperson to quote any statement that Yogi Adityanath made on infrastructure, no statement. Education, no statement. You cannot have a government which is so busy in its ideology that it has relegated the idea of governance. The idea of outside in politics is the agenda of people is supreme. It's not about who becomes the leader. The leader becomes a leader because he's able to address the issues of people and is able to accept failures and tell the path ahead. He does not become the leader because he has the most amount of cheerleaders on Twitter and most amount of people who can shout down other voices on Twitter.
Then why is Rahul Gandhi trying to play this game and beat the
my
BJP?
My illustrious co-panelist from the Samajwadi Party is very eloquent. But the methodology of ranking that he's the one to decide who's the most corrupt chief minister, and this is the final say. This is something that you need to get out of. You're talking with the young people. Let them decide who they want and the kind of policies that they want to follow and who they will vote for. If you're going to decide, even after being decimated in a state where you enjoyed supremacy for such a long time and you got the lowest number of seats, you still want to pontificate and tell the people that this is wrong and we were right. Let the people decide. I mean, elections are all about a demonstration of democracy, which ultimately the voters will decide.
Right, we're talking about the youth. Ghanshyam says this youth is allowed to criticize the government. Saurav Pant, come in here. You certainly professionally have benefited, you and other comedians, from having Rahul Gandhi around because it gives you a lot more material for your work.
Well, I'm happy to be sitting right in the center right now because both these parties have provided me a lot of ammunition.
They put you there strategically.
I noticed that. I feel like the Speaker of the House right now.
Comic relief.
Ma'am.
Absolutely. But I mean, look, the thing with, as a comedian, the thing is you have this concept called an open mic where you basically go and test out material in front of 30 to 40 people at a time. And for the longest time, I generally thought that Rahul Gandhi needs to go to open mics. Because I thought a lot of his speaking was not up to the mark. I saw the Berkeley talk recently where he was actually pretty impressive. He was self-effacing, he had some swag, which is everyone understands right now. Which I've never associated him with that. However, I do think that quite a long way to go, like from a public perception perspective. Like even though I saw that speech, there was a point in the middle where right towards the end he said something where he's like, I think cleanliness and hygiene is a good thing. I'm like, yeah, really? And I can't say anything because it's the same week when Narendra Modi went to Bhutan and called it Nepal. So, I think on both ends, but either way, I do think, I think Suhail is right that the BJP, the fact that they're attacking Rahul Gandhi right now means that they're insecure, and he should take that as a compliment. The fact that they are getting so insecure, and I don't understand this like battle for Twitter. Who cares? Like, no, yeah. There's not a single discerning person votes. Who sees 29,000 votes for Rahul Gandhi or Narendra Modi and goes like, you got my vote. Nobody thinks that. Like, literally, I have, like, I checked up my Twitter profile. I think I have 30% fake followers. And I was really happy because I didn't have to pay for them.
No. All right, but you know, back there, at least you saw Rahul Gandhi taking questions from the audience. Somebody says that we can criticize the government. Ghanshyam says, we don't see you, comics, for example, actually taking on the Prime Minister.
We do a lot, actually. So I was recently working on a stand-up set where I was doing jokes on Narendra Modi, Arvind Kejriwal, and Rahul Gandhi because I wanted to confuse people to try and figure out what my political ideologies are because
Is there more of a danger that somebody in the audience will sue you or whatever if you're taking on the government? Look at what's happened with Mersal in Tamil Nadu. The BJP is protesting. They want dialogues cut in this film. The producer is saying he's willing to do it.
It's ridiculous.
At least with the Congress... with Rahul Gandhi, you can take him on.
I started my career in 2008 when Dr. Manmohan Singh was the Prime Minister. And again, I owe a lot of money to his government at that point of time. And I didn't hear the kind of hate that I get right now for making one statement about Narendra Modi where immediately 30,000 people will swoop down on me and call me a leftist. And I mean, I've been trying to book my tickets to Pakistan for a long time. It's getting ridiculous. However, that being said, I do think the opposite side, where we are talking about grace in debate and we are talking about them rising above this. Recently, what's been happening and I've been noticing is that Congress trolls are taking a cue from BJP and trying to be exactly the same thing.
That's my point.
And it is absolutely counterintuitive to what you're supposed to be representing if you're trying to be the opposite.
Just one very quick point. My advice to the BJP, although no one listens, is... the day you start abusing, locking up people, creating ordinances which suppress the freedom of expression, you are alienating the largest voting group in your constituencies, which is the young people. The young people want that rebellious streak intact. And I think they would be advised not to do this thing, you know, this banning of films, all that. I mean, all governments have done it, to be fair.
Correct.
You know, Congress has not been holier than thou either. But today, the mood and the world has changed. Accept dissent. Don't be so fastidious about, you know, suppressing it every time it's...
So as they say, when you don't play a joke on the government will play a joke on you. So you have to choose which side you want to be.
Let's bring in the audience here. The youth are rebellious. Would you go in for the underdog?
First of all, there's one question. Most of the time, Rahul Gandhi especially, he start joke on other, but finally people laugh on him. You know, or I'm a political science teacher. Right. There is a lots of student when we just click the name Rahul Gandhi, they start laughing.
So, hey, can you change that? This is what he's come to be associated with. Can that be changed?
It is. You go back into history and see what used to happen with George W. Bush. You know, people would mock him. People would make fun of him. And then there was a turn. And the turn was just not post 9/11, but it was in his second term and the way he handled things. I think it can happen. The point that he makes is right. What always happens, and again, he's trying to ape Modi. See, Modi is a brilliant orator. Modi understands speech craft and he understands statecraft. Rahul Gandhi may be a good strategist. That doesn't make him a great orator. He should speak less, strategize more. So when he speaks, whatever he does, it's laden with weight. Today, he also wants to compete on the same bandwidth. He'll never manage.
So don't
Modi's
try and
too
beat
quick
the BJP
off the
at its
no.
own game.
My question is for Manish Shankar, sir. Recent results were not in your favor. So is this the reason why you are making a change in the leadership, as you must have started aiming for the 2019 elections?
I think Rahul's becoming the president has been in the works for a long time. Unlike what was suggested to us, the party actually does run on the basis of a collective wisdom which is represented in the Congress Working Committee. And within the Congress Working Committee, there's a further inner group which is almost on a daily basis consulting with whoever happens to be the president. And therefore, I think there has been a feeling that if in the immediate aftermath of our crushing defeat in 2014, we were to make a sudden change, it would amount to a discontinuity, that we had 5 years before us, that the outcome was decided a long time ago, but that the right moment for that had to be decided. And as it happens, perhaps it's coincidence, perhaps it's wisdom, I'm not sure which. I think it's a combination of the two. This is the right moment to effect that change, because the credibility of the government is on the decline. And the minute he comes into his own, he will have the opportunity of not only answering jibe for jibe, which is necessary to get the headlines, but also talking substance, which incidentally I have been urging on him for some time. But I think he had the problem that there was his own government in power. So if he attacked them, he'd be in trouble, as he got into it once. Or if he just parroted them, he'd say, but what are you talking about, Manmohan Singh saying the same thing?
Same thing, yeah.
Now I think he's in a position where he can articulate. And very fortunately, I'm glad he mentioned the Berkeley speech. The Berkeley speech was not about jibes. It was about the issues that apparently concern our youth most, principally employment. And the figure he used there has never been used before, that every day there are 30,000 young people who come into the job market, and so far the government has been able to provide only 450 of them with jobs. So when he becomes president and comes into his own, then, and I think only then, will you be able to judge whether he's measuring up or not. And my suspicion is that he will measure up.
Sir, recently in Himachal Pradesh, Rahul Gandhi has given CM candidate seat to Veerbhadra Singh, and he is under many corruption charges. So how would he defend that, and how do you see that?
And he's given his seat to his son, so the dynasty continues.
Yeah, Sukram has also joined BJP. So
Sukram's son.
Sukram's son and Sukram also. But it's not even, you know. Anyway, let's not get into that. You see, I once heard Mulayam Singh Yadav in Parliament, and he said, हम क्या देखने में बहुत खूबसूरत हैं, हम क्या बहुत अच्छे वक्ता हैं, हमारे साथ जनता इसलिए जुड़ी है कि हम उनके मुद्दों को उठाते हैं. I raise issues that are linked to the people, and that is why I'm a leader. I'm not a handsome man. I'm not a great orator, which was, I think, the best personal analysis anybody could have done about himself. I again want to say that a leader is not a leader without foot soldiers. And Congress needs to acquire a lot of committed foot soldiers. Congress needs to first build on the ground a social alliance that can be translated into a political alliance. Its biggest problem ever since the Mandal came has been that. And the Congress has not been able to co-opt social groups who could give it the impetus to win elections one after another. You see, BJP is full of social engineers. I didn't take one particular leader very seriously in the BJP, but I then had a conversation with him about the social architecture of Uttar Pradesh, and he impressed me no end.
Why didn't you name
Bhupendra Yadav? He impressed me no end. I mean, he was so good, and
he's such a bright chap that if they were sensible, they should make him the Prime Minister.
No,
I greatly admire.
May I say one thing? You see, in politics, it doesn't pay to be petulant. In politics, according to me, it pays to be generous. You know, you remember when there was an attack on Parliament House, the first person your party president called up was the then Prime Minister to ensure that whether he was safe or not.
Yep.
We need to set up such precedents. You know, you should at least be good to each other socially, if not politically. And that perhaps Rahul can do. I can see that spark in him. And he should build on that.
I want to just take quick closing arguments, Rashid. First with you.
I think Rahul needs to sort out a lot of this ideological question that Congress party is facing, because unlike the BJP and Sangh Parivar, in Congress there is no that kind of clarity on the core ideology, what Congress stands for. Look at the issue of secularism. There are two brands of secularism that the Congress has been practicing. One was propagated by Jawaharlal Nehru, which said that the religion should not play a active role in politics. And there was, of course, Gandhiji's way of looking at secularism, where he thought that, you know, religion is the integral part of politics. So there are a lot of problems are there. There is total lack of communication within Congress. AICC session that is supposed to be held twice a year or once a year has not been held. The last plenary was in 2010. So, you know, the Rahul Gandhi needs to interact with ordinary Congress workers to know what are their expectations from him. And yeah, so that, you know, he can deliver it.
Mani, Rahul Gandhi in Gujarat, making the BJP nervous, trying to play their own game, going to temples. He's visited 4 temples and things like that. Suhail says you've got to come into your own.
If he
being a BJP's B team is not going to work.
If he, Gandhiji, as far as I can remember or know, visited the Vaikom temple and the Balmiki temple here, he wasn't a temple grower, but he was a very religious man. Indira Gandhi was a frequent visitor to temples. I used to travel with Rajiv Gandhi, and to my mind, somewhat unfortunately, he was very keen on visiting temples, which took away from the time that we had with the people. So there's been a long tradition of Congress people visiting temples.
Now,
how does that amount to soft
labor? Because the state of the economy is not looking that good, or should you try and play the game the BJP is playing?
The BJP game is not to visit temples. It is to provoke Hindus to be anti-Muslim. And Rahul Gandhi has never attempted to provoke anyone to be anti-Muslim. It is our secularism is respect for all religions. Even though Jawaharlal Nehru was a self-proclaimed agnostic, and so am I, that doesn't mean that we do not respect the right of others to hold beliefs that we do not hold. The essence of secularism is that. And I think what we are seeing and will see more and more is Rahul Gandhi addressing issues. Because now he's the president and he'll have his working committee, which will contain some old faces and which will contain some new faces.
All right,
and
Jajan, these together.
This narrative itself needs to change. That it's a place of worship should not be spoken of in this context. If he's going to a temple, well and good. Otherwise, he needs to deliver on the ground. If he can match the aspirations of the people will decide. And the BJP is going to take every election seriously. And where you need a political response, we need to answer the political response. If there's a counter, if there's a battle on any level, social media with the people, we are clearly joined in the situation where our policy of reaching out to the people and working for them will continue at all levels.
Sham, your closing argument?
Well, my closing argument is that India is neither a dealership of RSS nor a propagation of Congress as a political party. The power really lies in the hands of the people. They elect, they bring the best people forward as leaders, and leaders are the ones who can give a better aspiration, a better idea for future. Akhilesh Yadav has tried doing that, accepted his failures, taken his progress and presented it to people. Rahul Gandhi will have to do the same. It is the people who decide.
Sort of the people who decide. The fact is the Prime Minister, no matter what, whether the economy is taking a downturn, what the job numbers are, his personal popularity has not been affected.
I think Rahul Gandhi needs to probably do like about 1,000 more Berkeleys and specifically do more Hindi speeches. I personally don't know if you support Narendra Modi or Rahul Gandhi or Akhilesh or MS Dhoni or SpongeBob SquarePants, whoever it is. I just think that the rhetoric in India needs to change. It's gotten disgusting. It's become the most vitriolic thing. Even on a discussion today where it's been relaxed and this thing, we've still not covered issues. We've still covered emotions and feelings and all that kind of stuff. And I think we need to start having concrete discussions about issues and solutions as opposed to our feelings and our vitriol and hatred and enmity towards each other. So maybe Rahul can set the trend for that. I don't know.
Suhail.
More Rahul, less Gandhi. If he reinvents himself, he becomes more accessible. Change your Twitter account to Rahul Gandhi and not Office of RG. Become more accessible to people. Raise issues, not just issues alone. Provide solutions. We all know what the problems are. Come with solutions, come with data points which can't be factually inaccurate, and then reinvent yourself. It's not going to happen overnight, but if the intent is there, delivery will happen.
Rahul Gandhi created an impression in Berkeley, but can he do the same? Can he be a mass leader here?
I think a lot depends how deep, you know, the popularity of Narendra Modi falls. Because, you know, people of India tend to vote against, you know, incumbent government or a towering personality. You look at 2004, the whole election was, you know, Vajpayee, India shining. And I know people used to ask that Vajpayee versus a question mark. But people did vote against Vajpayee government at that point of time.
Yeah.
An alternative emerged. So I think Rahul Gandhi is not in a tearing hurry to become Prime Minister of India. He just wants to make a dent in, you know, BJP.
That can be an advantage or a disadvantage, Neera.
It may be an advantage because he might be more open to a decentralization of power. This is what we need. Political parties across the world are moving towards this model rather than one person, who is the embodiment of power. We need a new young leadership infused with energy, but more importantly with an idea of an inclusive India, where nobody is targeted on grounds of their religion or their caste or their gender or their sexual preferences. This is what we need. We do not need an India in which people are targeted because of their dietary habits or because they belong to a particular caste that has been stereotyped in perverse ways, or Muslims, yeah, for that matter.
That's a good note to end on. Is this a do or die moment both for Rahul Gandhi and the opposition? Thank you for joining us on We the People. Good night.